racing. Great start from pole position by the world champion Jorge Lorenzo.
Welcome to Motorpod, the internet radio show all about motorcycle road racing. This is episode number 489 for Wednesday, the 23rd of March, 2016. My name's Martin Darlington. I need to go to the toilet, so I'm trying to get through as quickly as I can. Actually, I'm not. Unfortunately, due to circumstances of life and the demands of employers, neither Dave nor Harry could join me this week. They possibly may appear, Harry especially, by magic, thanks to the wonders of the Motopod time-space continuum warping machine that we've invented and built out of old Guinness cans and basically... Oh, hello.
Yes, hello, everybody. As Martin said, through the magic of recording, I will be joining Martin basically 2 days after he recorded it. But, you know, we're going to work some magic, and hopefully Martin and I can more or less have a conversation about motorcycle racing. Anyway, back to the big man himself.
I should have paused that, shouldn't I? I was thinking, listening to Harry last week, when you're going to slurp the coffee, really, shouldn't you just pause the recording? But actually, we had quite a lot of feedback saying how much they enjoyed it, so no pressure. First thing I'd like to do is say there's no interviews, but I'd like to thank enormously Brian Elliott, new subscriber, and a new donor, Sam Moore. Both of you, thank you so much. Subscriptions, however modest you may feel they are actually really, really welcome, because we can predict that income and allows us to budget for the year quite a lot more effectively. Listener feedback. We've had a number of emails, and we've also, just going back to the subject of how well Harry did, and it was brilliant. I really enjoyed listening to it myself. We had a tweet from Curtis Lee saying, no offence to the rest of the hosts, but when Harry does solo shows, they're really good. So hopefully Harry will be able to just pop in every now and again and give us some extra bits. I hope so.
Yeah, big thank you to everyone for all that positive feedback on the old solo shows. As I usually say at the start of them, you know, it's not an ideal situation. And obviously this Frankenstein of a show isn't an ideal situation either. But yeah, big thanks to everyone, and really do appreciate it.
We also, I noticed on Twitter that Andrew Mantle, long-time listener of ours, well, he used to be a long-time listener of ours, he was asking Paddock Pass Pod. It's a very good bunch of guys. It's David Emmett and Stephen English and Neil Morrison and others. When their next episode is. So I shanghaied a tweet and said, we're publishing this week. So, Andrew, that's what you get if you go out with other podcasts when we think you're, you know, exclusive to us. Onwards and upwards, we had the first races of the weekend. And I'm going to go through some news and then fairly briefly, probably, the race results with a few a few bits of extra colour that I got from actually being at the track, although do be aware that, as you'll all know, when you've been to circuits, you often know less than the people who are watching on telly at home, because they're getting all the information being networked in from all around the paddock and the journalists and everyone else. The first big news broke over the weekend that Valentino Rossi signed a new two-year deal with Yamaha. Amid much crowing from the, and I've got to thank Retro T99 on Twitter, his handle is at Tobster99, much going from the Valiban. I don't know if it's Tobster's copyright on that name, but I quite like that, the Valiban. Yeah, saying, ah, oh, there you go, Yamaha knew who's worth what. That was kind of hold below the waterline. Yeah, Yamaha announced that actually both Valentino and Jorge had been given the same a contract offer, not necessarily the contract being the same, but a two-year deal was put on the table to both of them, and Valentino had immediately signed happily. Lorenzo, they hadn't heard from him. His managers described it as the best deal of his racing career, but he's yet to commit. Lynn Jarvis believes this is so he can examine a rival offer from Ducati, which probably would see Andrea Dovizioso sweating quietly in a corner. However, according to a motorsport.com website, Lorenzo has said the offer from Yamaha is the only one he's received. He said he'll make a decision in the next few days, 2 weeks at most. So, I think if he showed interest, it's fairly certain Ducati would jump at the chance of getting him. I'm wondering if he's just waiting to see how the Ducatis get on in Argentina.
Yeah, I think that the Ducati rumour is quite persistent, and depending on which websites you read and who you listen to, it may or not be true. You know, as I've joked about on previous episodes of the show, every year the Lorenzo to Ducati rumour comes up. I'm not sure that Lorenzo would suit the Ducati, you know. I think that Lorenzo's style is a bit closer to Andrea Dovizioso's style than it is to Andrea Iannone's. And, you know, we saw in the race that obviously Dovi managed to do a bit better than Andrea Iannone. But I think it's just a very, very big risk, probably an unnecessary risk for Lorenzo. You know, he knows that Yamaha are always going to be in that top three. And for me personally, I think that the biggest reason that he's sort of, air quotes, sweating Yamaha is to try and get more money or a slightly better contract from them. You know, as we saw in the race, Lorenzo is, at least at this very early stage, the man to beat and probably has the bargaining power in that relationship. But, you know, as I said, it's all still very up in the air, so anything could really happen with that situation.
Bradley Smith was announced after last week's news that he said that Tech2R had made it clear they would not be renewing his contract. And he was very quickly announced as a factory rider for KTM in 2017-2018. Great news for KTM. I mean, Bradley's been described by Guy Coulon, his crew chief at Tech2R and a bit of a mechanical genius, as one of the best development riders he's ever worked with. He said he's very analytical and very precise and consistent with what he tells the mechanics, so they know what they were looking at and working on. So that's high praise. For his part, I think Bradley will hope the KTM prove to be more Suzuki and less Aprilia.
Very orange team, that KTM Bradley Smith duo as well. Not sure how Bradley Smith will look in full orange leathers. But, you know, Bradley Smith is obviously now shaving his head. So maybe no ginger clash there. But just a bit of inside baseball here for everyone. I do the race reports on MotoGP.com. And that means I more or less type along as the race is playing out. So, you know, Bradley Smith's announcement broke just before the start of the, the Moto3 race. So there I am, frantically trying to keep up with the action of Moto3, tip, 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 tappy away on my keyboard. While, you know, then in between frantic Moto3 passes, trying to get this Bradley Smith press release up on the website. So, yeah, a little request out there for any riders. If you are planning on announcing your plans for the coming season, can you please do it either at the start of the weekend or at the end of the weekend or when there's no action on, because I only have so many hands. Thanks.
In other news, Casey Stoner has had a two-day test at Lasalle. This is the test he should have run after the official test, but he had to postpone because someone at Ducati hadn't noticed that they'd be within the 14 days of a race, and there's a restriction on testing within 14 days of a race. But as it's a private test, we haven't got any official times.
Also, it was announced that Casey Stoner will not be replacing Daniele Petrucci. That honour will go to Michele Pirro instead. Ducati more or less said that it was up to Stoner whether he wanted to or not, and Stoner has basically said that, you know, he doesn't feel he's fit enough or competitive enough to replace Petrucci. Petrucci unfortunately re-broke, I think it was two bones in his hand, just while riding, you know, not even through a crash, just while riding. That's how much pressure these guys are putting through their hands. So Petrucci will be out at least for Argentina and Austin, probably for a fair bit longer. Today, on Thursday, he had surgery and had to have an additional 20 screws and two plates put in his hand. So best of luck to Petrucci. And, you know, it's great when riders, you know, do the impossible and come back from horrendous injuries. But also, you know, I think sometimes riders rush back a bit too soon. And, you know, we have things like this that could potentially ruin Petrucci's career. You know, John Hopkins, what was it, in 2011 or 2012, when he wild carded at Brno alongside Alvaro Bautista and Suzuki, and Hopper crashed and broke his finger. Then he got his finger plated, much like Petrucci's done with his hands, and then because Hopper was battling for the BSB championship, he then went back, and because he was pushing too hard, you know, the plating on his finger, that broke apart, so he then had to have his finger amputated off. And while it's all very well and good to have a finger amputated, you know, if the same thing would have happened to Daniele Petrucci's hand, that would be horrific for Petrucci. So really do hope that Petrucci does take the time to get healthy and come back.
There have been a few questions about technical concessions. So we've borrowed from Crash.net, and I think Neil Morrison put this together, a fairly useful little table. Basically says Yamaha, Honda, Ducati, no concessions. So they get 7 engines. Their engines are on a development freeze for the season, and they're allowed 5 days of private tests during the season. Everybody gets 22 litres of fuel, the same tyres and the same ECU. Suzuki and Aprilia do have some concessions. They're allowed 9 engines instead of 7. There is no development freeze on the engines, and they have unlimited private tests with test riders or the official riders. The system for removing or returning concessions will be continued to be based on accumulating concession points. So you get 3 concession points for first place, 2 for second, 1 for third. If Suzuki or Aprilia reach 6 points during the season, so 2 firsts, 3 seconds or 6 thirds, they immediately lose the unlimited testing. They continue 9 engines to the end of this season but drop to 7 for next year. And the exemption for the engine development freeze continues to the end of this season, but then also is cancelled. If Honda, Yamaha, Ducati were to have failed to claim a single concession point in the year, they would then get the full list of concessions next year, but that's a moot point because they've all gained at least 1 point in the first race, which was quite good, seeing Yamaha, Ducati, Honda. Just a quick little bit of speculation on silly season. We had said we'd try and avoid it, but it's become unavoidable because it started already in the paddock. This is our wild prediction. I say our, I'm just sharing the responsibility out so people don't just shout at me when I get it completely wrong. Lorenzo signs for Ducati on a Megabucks deal. Yamaha break the bank and recruit Vinales to take his place at Movistar Yamaha. Dovi moves across to Suzuki to partner up with a promoted Johann Zarco. And we'll probably see Alex Rins come into Tech 2R for Bradley Smith, if he shows promise in Moto 2 in his second year as much as he did last, and when ready for moving up if and when Rossi finally retires in 2024. Incidentally, if Dovi could then ride for KTM and or Aprilia before he retires, he'd equal Alex Baris's record of 5 different manufacturers in the Premier class. This was courtesy of Dr. Martin Rains, unsurprisingly. Honda, Suzuki, Yamaha, Kajiva and Ducati. In other news, a bit of technical news. The Grand Prix Commission have met. This is Carmelo Spalletta and representatives from ERTA, MSMA, etc. They've agreed some amendments to the technical rules. Aerodynamic wings are banned with immediate effect in Moto 2 and from the start of 2017 in Moto 3. Fairings designed to deflect water thrown up by the front wheel will be allowed, provided they have no aerodynamic purpose. And a possible loophole there. Moto 2 are now going to be allowed to use one of 2 approved quick shifters rather than a single manufacturer that was currently allowed, and this is to reduce the incidence of missed gears and the potential dangers that that involves.
No word yet on whether the MotoGP winglets will be banned. For the MotoGP winglets to be banned and or altered, it would need a unanimous decision from the MSMA, which would mean Honda, Yamaha, Ducati and all that having to all decide. You know, obviously, out of those 3, Honda's probably the one that wants them banned the most because Honda have done the least research, it seems, on winglets. Whereas, you know, Ducati and Yamaha both seem to have put in a pretty little penny to try and develop winglets. So I can't really see it happening unless maybe, you know, maybe if the manufacturers agree to that, then maybe Dorna or someone else give them, you know, something else in return. So I will have to wait and see. Certainly Matt Oxley will be eagerly awaiting to see if they're banned or not. If you want some contrasting opinions, shall we say, on winglets, then be sure to check out Matt Oxley's Twitter, as he definitely is not a fan.
News back home, very promising news. Circuit of Wales news. You had to dig a bit in this. I saw a headline saying TVR announced their plans to reopen production car production in a factory in Ebervale. Ebervale's in the same part of South East Wales, that the Circuit of Wales is going to be. And sure enough, when you dig in, they're going to be either next door to the track or actually on the track site. It depends if they occupy an existing building off track or they have a purpose-built one built in the infield. The new CEO of the car company, Les Edgar, who heads a consortium of wealthy enthusiasts who bought the company back from Russian ownership, has long said that to produce cars worthy of the name, they need to build them with easy access to a racing circuit. And I'd just like to add, if They really want to fully recapture the glory of TVR's heritage. They need to, when you buy one, they need to include their sufficient breakdown cover. Best looking car on the planet to be stood on the side of the road waiting for the breakdown truck to get to you. But they are. They're an iconic British brand, originally built in Blackpool, long shut down. So it'd be nice to see them come back. But it also dug out some news that the Circuit of Wales is a deal with insurance giant Aviva to the tune of £300 million is imminent. Not sure what imminent means, but all good news. Anyway, back to the weekend, and we do have to, unfortunately, bring some really, really tragic news. There is a support series that runs here. Well, there's a race series that runs through the year, and this involves, it's called the LaSalle 600 Cup, and there were a number of people I know race in that series, including a neighbour of mine and a very close friend, another neighbour, is his mechanic. Unfortunately, there was a racing incident. One bike dropped a load of oil, and 11 other bikes crashed in it. And this resulted in the awful fatality of a Tunisian rider, 49-year-old Tunisian rider. So hats off to him. All the guys I know race are, you know, similar ages to me and Dave. Sorry, Dave, to lump you in with me. But Taufik Gattouchi was a Tunisian racer. You know, he was just out there for the fun of it. They don't make any money out of it. In fact, it costs them an awful lot of money to race. So he was very much one of us. Nobody's fault. There's an investigation going on into exactly what happened and why. But we had a moment's silence on race night, which was entirely appropriate. So thoughts to Taufik's family and friends. We're back to the old thing. You know, it's the recent fatalities of all the ones I've been aware of have been riders hit by following bikes. If we are going to have a sport where riders are on the circuit at the same time, that is a danger we can try and reduce as much as possible, but we can never get rid of completely. The alternative is we do time trials, and that will be like watching the old World Superbike Super Pole. Come out, set a time, let's see if someone can beat it. You know, don't know about you guys, but I don't really think I'd find that anywhere near as exciting. We could almost become like Formula One. More Formula One later. Anyway, the weekend did continue in the best spirit of bike racing, where we set tragedy aside and grieve later, because we have stuff to get on with. And I think, without being callous, that is the right approach to take. QP for Moto3 was interesting. Romano Fanati finally got his second. Actually, the first one was only late last year at Motegi, I believe. But he got his second pole position by some masterful traffic management. And he managed to get himself a toe down that kilometre-plus straight. Obviously, the finish line isn't a kilometre from the turn 16, but it's a good old length. And for a Moto3 bike, getting a draft is really, really important.
Yeah, a toe down the straight in Moto3 can be worth half a second. And then if you have a toe basically the whole way around the lap, obviously there are some quite long straight bits in LaSalle apart from the main straight, that can be worth up to a whole second. So a slipstream really, really important there. And there had been some quite high wind throughout the weekend, so slipstream helping a bit more there as well.
And he pipped Livio Loi by 0.047 of a second. Worth noting that Livio Loi did his time on his own, very similar to Danny Kent last year. So we had a front row of Fanati, Loi and Brad Binder, a second row of Quartararo, Navarro and Aaron Canet, who's been impressing, Nicola Antonelli, Bo Bensnyder and Enya Bastianini with a third row, so on and so forth back. But most of the usual suspects with a couple of new ones thrown in there. Interestingly, we had the first lap when Livio Loi was in the lead, and then he dropped back to 10th on the second lap. He had an incident, he ran wide, or he got punted wide, and we very much broke down into groups. There was a leading group of about 8, then there was another group of about, which fairly quickly broke down to 5, then there was another group of 5 or 6, then another group of 5 or 6, and then it strung out behind. Leading group, I mean, it was classic Moto3. Anyone could lead at the end of any lap. Sometimes anyone else could lead. We saw Brad Binder led a lot of laps.
Yeah, for me, Brad Binder was probably actually the strongest rider of that group. As he said, Martin, Binder was able to lead more or less when he wanted. And he'd only really get sucked back down the straight As we found out in his post-race interview, not to spoil the race, but he did finish second, you know, Binder sort of knew that come that last lap, it would be a bit of a lucky dip. So for me, I think that Binder could be a bit of a quiet title contender. Certainly this performance in LaSalle was one of his strongest rides, I think. You know, Binder, Fanati, and Jakob Kornfahl, all three of them have started every single Moto3 race. Nicolò Antonelli has missed a couple through injury, otherwise he'd be in that group as well. But Binder still hasn't taken a win yet, but I think that in Sepang last year, I think he probably could have won that, but he was maybe helping Miguel Oliveira a bit. And I think that, I don't want to say it was luck that won the Qatar GP in Moto3, but I think that it can certainly be a bit hectic in Qatar with that long straight. But, you know, that's just my opinion.
Fanati led. Quartararo, interestingly, was not as prevalent as we'd have thought or hoped. He was, I think, leading up the third group at one point. So, yeah, it was strange to see. Especially Quartararo, that so much hope had been placed on. The Leopard bikes didn't really set the world afire. So it'd be interesting to watch, see how they come along through the development.
Yeah, I've no real idea why Quartararo was struggling so much. He had looked good in testing, but come race day, it just seemed like he couldn't really get it all together. He had a couple of quite big moments, but yeah, otherwise, Quartararo, big question mark over his head, you know. Guys who he pretty routinely beat in the Sev, like Nicolò Belega, pretty much pulled his pants down come the World Championship race, and Belega has never raced at the circuit before, whereas Quartararo has a year under his belt. So a couple of question marks over Quartararo. I hope that he's not a false dawn in terms of all the promise that was placed behind him, but he definitely needs to start putting in some good results.
Brad Binder, however, wow. Bagnaia, Antonelli, Bastianini and Fanati. And Sky Racing Team VR46's new boy, Nicolò Belega. Really, really good. Navarro was in there as well in the leading group. So, yeah, actually, so we had seven. Livio Loi was in a group with Ertl, Kornfahl, Juan Danilo, Philip Ertl. Follow along behind. Then there was another group just a bit behind them. Livio Loi slowly started to bridge the gap to the leading group. But it was almost like he got there, took a look, went, nah. And he never really penetrated. Fanati was being his usual bullish, aggressive self. And unfortunately, as he started the final lap in second place, with Antonelli behind him and Binder ahead, having led the lap before, he pushed a little bit too hard and managed to outbreak himself in one of the corners. The rest of them swept past.
Interestingly, Romano Fanati was not too happy with his new teammate, Nicolò Belega. As Martin said, Belega had an incredibly impressive ride, you know, right up there battling with them. I think he led at some point as well. But Fanati is the experienced man inside that team, that Sky Racing Team VR46. Yeah, that's their name. He sort of thought that Belega should be helping him. Belega didn't quite see it that way. So it seems like after only just one race, there's already some tension inside that team. And, you know, who knows where it will go. Teams involving VR46 seem to attract a bit of tension recently.
Brad Binder led onto the final straight at the end of the last lap. The old Moto3 conundrum. Do you remember last year, Miguel Oliveira on that amazing charge? And they said to him, you know, do you want to be in the lead? I can't remember which track it was, but it was another one with a long finish. And he said, a long finish straight. And he said, I didn't really know. And I thought, well, I am in the lead. Let's just see what I can do. And I think in that race, he held him off. Brad Binder did not quite hold off Nicolò Antonelli, who beat him by 0.007 of a second. Yet again, the Moto3 race at Qatar ended really, really close. Bagnaia, who was visibly behind them, was still only 1,400s, nearly 1,500s behind. Fanati came in fourth, Bastianini fifth, Belega sixth, Navarro seventh. About a second back was Loi, and then quite a distance behind him, we had Ertl, Kornfahl, Danilo, Mir, Quartararo, Ben Snyder and Canet finishing off the points. So Antonelli leads, going to Argentina, Binder and Bagnaia, you know, right on him. 20 and 16 points respectively. It was what we've come to expect from Moto3. It was punchy, exciting, Maybe the leading group was slightly smaller than we'd expected. I think a lot of people expect to see Quartararo, Ertl, Mir up there. We'd certainly expect to see Livio Loi at the front of that group, not struggling to keep up with the back of it. But as we've said time and time again, and I forget it myself, it's testing when we test. It ain't racing. You know, it's really quite galling when you think, oh, I've got a good idea what's going to happen. And then when you come to race day, you realise, no, I haven't really.
The other big, maybe not surprise, but unfortunately disappointment for me was Ennea Bastianini. You know, after his great performance last year, I really thought that he'd be a title contender from round one, but he never really seemed to have the pace in testing nor in qualifying. In the race, he was able to eventually fight his way up and join that fifth group, but he never really seemed to be in the mix. Certainly not as much as the likes of Binder or Antonelli were. Hopefully, Bastianini's problems can be resolved because, you know, despite him not setting the world alight during testing, he was quite confident that his bike was in a really good position. So I hope that that confidence doesn't come back to haunt him and that, you know, maybe when he was sitting in the box, maybe it would have been a good idea to get in one extra lap.
Moto2 QP, Jonas Folger, pole position, Sam Lowe, second, Alex Rins, third. Second row was Zarco, Morbidelli and Cortese. Third row, Baldessari, Schrotter, Nakagami. Fourth row, Luthi, Kent, Pons. Fifth row, oh, there he is, Alex Marquez. Second year with Mark VDS. That is a good team. That is an especially good team in Moto2. Dude, I'm starting to think all the stuff Mark said was, well, actually, he's actually faster than me, was just politeness. Simone Corsi and Dominic Agata made up the fifth row. Off they went. And this was drama. Basically, we were sat there. Now, we were sat down the straight from the lights gantry, so we couldn't see the light. All we saw was Folger get a hell of a start, and I immediately thought, well, hang on, it's far too good a start. Folger's obviously jumped the start, and off they went, and nothing came about Folger. What did come up was Zarco, Lowe's, Rins and Schrotter were being investigated for a possible jump start. What happened, for whatever reason, those four, and it turned out more than those four, jumped the start. Stopped, Jonas Folger made a normal smooth getaway, which tells me maybe his reactions aren't as good. Because you know what normally happens? One rider just moves, everyone else thinks, he's going, I'm going too. Competitive spirit, and they're so aware. Maybe Jonas Folger sat there going, oh, the light's gone out. Anyway, he makes a smooth getaway, and the reason he gets away from everyone else is because they've stopped thinking, oh, there is this rule that you have to be seen to gain an advantage. Sam Lowe's moved about an inch. Franco Morbidelli, who was not coming up on any screen saying he's being investigated for jump start, basically popped a little wheelie. But they all stopped. Then they went again. Within a couple of laps, comes up, Zarco, Lowe's, Rins and Schrotter, they are being investigated for jump start. Then it comes up, says, yes, they've all got a ride through. So they come into the pits in fairly quick order. Very quickly after they've come through, Nakagami and Mulhauser are told they're also start jumpers and they have to do a ride through. Meanwhile, Jonas Folger is disappearing into the distance until on lap, can't remember where it was. Folger. Only lap three. He chucked it at the scenery. Just all his own doing, just crashed. It was a real shame. Then we had Franco Morbidelli and Tom Luthi show, and it was great. They were beating each other up. Neither of them could really lose the other. We'd get a couple of laps of Luthi and a couple of laps of Morbidelli, then four laps of Luthi. Then we had 9 laps of Morbidelli crossing the line. But trust me, there were a lot of overtakes going on in between those. What was really good to see was we had Simone Corsi just behind them, and battling. Physically in the race, we had Sandra Cortese just behind him, battling with Hafiz Syrin, and they had a race-long battle as well. And it was good to see Cortese, you know, really getting to grips with it. Danny Kent promoted, possibly artificially, because of the demotion to Rins and Lowe's, but we also had the very exciting spectacle of Alex Rins and Sam Lowe's, especially carving through the pack, to the point we started thinking they might get in the points. Yeah, Alex Rins got back to 8th place, Sam to 9th. Sam set 2 lap records on the way to that. Fastest ever Moto2 bike round La Salle in a race. So, good news for Sam. Alex Rins as well, equally impressive. Then we got to right near the end. Lucia Morbidelli dusting up. A couple of laps from the end, it suddenly comes up on the screens that Morbidelli and Cortese are now being investigated for jump start. Now, it does say in the rules that unless there are extraordinary circumstances, race direction are meant to inform a rider of a jump start within four laps of the start. Clearly didn't. 18 laps, 19 laps, they clearly can't bring them in for a ride through. Not by that stage. This is why I think it has to be at the beginning to give them a fighting chance of getting back. They were given a 20-second penalty. Now, the experts in the paddock have looked at this and timed it, and they've worked out that Sam and Alex Lowes were penalised 24 to 25 seconds. So it's not quite fair, but 20 seconds is the only penalty, or that there's a range of penalties that most don't actually give, but on a time penalty, it's 20 seconds. So that's what Morbidelli and Cortese got. Tom Luthi has made the point since, quite rightly, he beat Morbidelli across the line. So he won anyway, but with the time penalty, Franco Morbidelli's moved down to 7th, a tenth of a second, less than a tenth of a second, ahead of Alex Rins, with Sam Lowes, you know, a second and a bit behind that. And Sandro Cortese was demoted to 11th. So Simone Corsi actually ended up on the podium. Bit of a debacle.
So Mike Webb spoke to a number of websites, you know, Crash.net, Autosport, Motorsport, and also MotoGP.com to sort of explain the situation. So what happened is that I think it was 8 riders jumped to start, you know, chain reaction sort of thing. And you can all include a link to the MotoGP.com article in the show notes for anyone who wants this in more detail. But basically, 8 riders jumped to start. Race direction use a 500 frame a second camera to judge a jump start so that, you know, they can figure that out. So what happened was that they assigned all of those 6 jump starts at the start, you know, Zarco, Lowes, Rins, all of them. But then there was a problem with the camera system, so they had to restart it, much like, you know, rebooting a computer. And that's why Cortese and Morbidelli's penalties came late. Now, as Mike Webb says in this article, is that, you know, for fans on TV, it might have been quite obvious, as Martin said, that Morbidelli got a jump start, but you have to judge all the riders with the same proof and with the same standard. So because all of these other riders had the camera judge them, essentially, they had to wait for the camera to come back to judge Morbidelli and Cortese, and that was just, you know, one of those unfortunate circumstances that hopefully they'll be able to avoid by tweaking the rules in future a bit.
We lost a lot of riders, Axel Pons, Xavi Vierge, Xavi Simeon, Alex Marquez, Yannis Folger, Julian Simon, and Edgar Pons all crashed out. Alex Marquez was interesting. He got back to the pits, and in a post-crash return to pits interview, he said the light seemed to flicker. Now, I've seen a number of replays, I'm sure other people have. On television, that's certainly not reflected, but we don't know. I believe there is an ongoing investigation by Race Direction. David Emmett made the point that because there'd been local stewards involved in the past in certain incidents who'd maybe interpreted the rules different, they had a new structure where they had experts who travel with the MotoGP paddock all around, and they would be Race Direction's committee for penalties. Well, I'm sorry, but you didn't do a very good job, guys. If someone moves at all, I've never seen the discretion applied. They didn't get an advantage, if anything, they actually hurt themselves. That could have been. It wasn't. So I believe at the moment those penalties stand. It would be really difficult for them to say, okay, Rins and Lowes, we're going to promote you by your 25 seconds that you actually took that we think you lost at the pace you were running. Well, that puts Alex Rins in the lead and Sam Lowes second, with Tom Luthi now demoted to 3rd. But what's Tom Luthi say about that? Be like, well, hang on a sec. You know, I won the race fair and square. You know, if they'd been there, maybe I'd be able to get past them. I'd have only been a second or two behind. I don't think they can change it now. What's done is done. I think we all need to move on. But there was a very funny comment I saw, and this was the Formula One reference I was going to come back to, of, you know, Formula One making a complete debacle of a new qualifying system. And on the Sunday night, MotoGP say, You, anything you can do, we can do better. Watch this. And promptly do. Anyway, onwards and upwards. Tom Lucy leading the championship. Louis Salom second with 20 points. Oh, yeah, I forgot to mention that. Salom got promoted with Morbidelli being sunk. Ironic, really. He really struggled last year, Louis Salom. Now, okay, you've got six riders, five of whom were ahead of him, who've had to do ride-throughs. Two riders who were both ahead of him had to do had time penalties applied. But, end of the day, he came second, and he's meant to be on a worse team than he was on last year. Well, I think he's on a less successful team than he was on last year, because last year he was on the accomplished Pons team, the Pagenis Amaryllis HP40 team. So, fair play to Louis Salom, who apparently burst into tears and thanked his mum afterwards. Bless him. On to MotoGP. The free practices were interesting. We regularly were seeing Maverick Vinales in the top two or three, Scott Redding in the top two or three, or four or five. Ian Ohne was on it. Hector Barbera, who I've been quite disparaging about before. I was saying Hector Toe Barbera. And then Mick Fikowski came up with a brilliant Hecto Barbera. So you get the toe bar bit in there for the caravan. He did really well. So, sorry, Hector. I think that was, he got through to Q2. Cal was having a pretty rotten weekend.
The other big, huge, massive, awesome surprise that we saw during free practice was that tire smoking is back, especially with the wild Colombian Yoni Hernandez. I think it was through turn 10, Hernandez was absolutely smoking that rear, and there were a couple of other riders who started doing it, mostly the Ducatis. I think it was Scott Redding was also getting the rear nice and smoky as well. Going back to that Gary McCoy style, you know, the theory is that if you're spinning the tire so much that it's smoking, it's that just the outside of the tire which gets hot and doesn't actually hurt it too bad. Not sure it's the fastest style in the world, as unfortunately both Hernandez and Redding found out. But it certainly looks impressive, and you know, I was very excited. Jumped out of my chair almost when I saw that tire smoking was back, because it's just really cool to see.
But when it came to Q1, Cal Crutchlow and Bradley Smith, two people you'd normally expect to see going direct to Q2, did in fact qualify and go through. Danilo Petrucci had, during one of the free practices, decided that he didn't think he could, he was going to be able to race because the pain in his hand was too much. And when he went and had the x-ray, they said, yeah, you've actually rebroken it. So he's almost certainly out of Argentina and quite possibly Austin. Whilst that bone mends properly. And it's a real shame because he's a great character and, you know, he's expected to do really well. We got to Q2 and Jorge Lorenzo got the pole position just from Marc Marquez, leaving it right till the end. Maverick Vinales got a front row again, similar to last year where he was on the front row with his teammate, Aleix Espargaró, who really seems to be struggling with either the electronics or the slightly revised bike or the tyres or a combination thereof. So we had Lorenzo, Marquez, Vinales. Rossi on the second row was in a Ducati sandwich with Ian Ohne ahead of him and Dovi behind. Then we had Pedrosa, Hector Barbera and Paul Espargaró on the third row. Cal Crutchlow, Bradley Smith and Scott Redding making an all-British fourth row. Good to see. And then onwards and backwards with the Hernandez, Laverty, Espargaró, Loris Baz, Bautista Miller, Rabat and Bradle. So we only had 20 starters.
The other interesting thing about qualifying was that Marc Marquez, when he was on his very, very last lap of the session, was he wasn't sure if he'd beaten the checkered flag or not. So, you know, better safe than sorry. He continued to push, and set a flying final lap. Unfortunately, he hadn't beaten the checkered flag, so that last time didn't count. But according to Marquez, on his lap reader on his bike, he saw a 154.2, which would have put him ahead of Jorge Lorenzo. So Marc Marquez, for a second there, thought he had pole, and a pretty strong pole at that. But unfortunately, Marquez didn't get it. But, you know, I think that proves that there is a bit more to both Honda and Marquez than we've seen throughout the weekend, and that, you know, Marquez does have this undeniable ability to dig deep and get the most out of any motorcycle he rides, even if it's only for one lap before he gracefully hurdles through the air and then unfortunately lands in the gravel trap.
Off they went, and Lorenzo got the whole shot, but was very quickly passed by Iannone, who looked just really, I wouldn't say smooth, but confident. And he was, there was a group breaking away at the front, right from the off, of Lorenzo, then the two Fletcher Ducatis, Rossi, Marquez tucked in behind, Danny Pedrosa and Maverick Vinales glued together just behind them. And just behind those in eighth place at the end of the first lap, we had Johnny Hernandez, who then unfortunately fell off. So that was quite short-lived, Johnny's sort of taste of single-figure positions. It was exciting at the start. It quickly kind of settled down a bit, and then Iannone fell off, touched the white line, and he said, "I wasn't even on the limit, felt fine, and it wasn't a breaking into a corner, just went down." I'm sure most of you have seen it. Dovi took over in the lead, with Lorenzo tucked in behind him, and then Lorenzo did one of his lovely, smooth, butter passes. Got past Dovi, but he didn't lose him. And that was the real key, I think, when we were watching the Ducatis. Jeez, they were fast down the straight. You saw it so clearly sat there. I'm sure you did on television as well, but you really get that feeling of speed, and they just looked quicker. Although, at about half-race distance, I had a glance at speed trap numbers, and actually the fastest at that stage was Rossi. But I think that must have been courtesy of a draft. Marquez had got past Rossi during the third lap, but he couldn't lose him. Now, Rossi said since he was quick enough to stay with that leading group, but he wasn't quick enough to attack. Danny Pedrosa slowly fell off the back of them, with Vinales slowly falling off the back of Pedrosa. Behind them, we had a good dust-up, Hector Barbaro, Bradley Smith and Pol Espargaró. They both got past Hector, first pole, a few laps later Bradley, but again, Bradley couldn't really close up to his mate with enough left to attack. Then you had Hector, then Scott Redding. Possibly a bit disappointing 10th, but up front, we just had Dovi just looking like the Dovi we expected to see last year on this, you know, revitalised Ducati. Pushing hard, but then the inevitable happened. Marquez, he's apparently said, "Now I'm going back to my wild style because it's the only way I can go fast. Try being really smooth, and I'm slow. Don't want to be slow, I want to be fast." He is right on the limit. It's very entertaining to watch, but you can't help thinking that that limit is, because he's kind of, it's an inconsistent wildness. Well, it's not, he's consistently wild, but it's not the same as being smooth and thinking, yes, I can break 1.75 metres later next time I come to that corner. Next lap, he doesn't know, because he'll be at a different angle and a different bit of the track, probably. But he did get past Dovi, and two laps later, Dovi got back past him. And what I loved about the racecraft here, by this stage, by the way, Lorenzo had pulled the pin, and the lead was never great. He led across the line by 2 seconds. Now, that's slightly artificial for what I'm about to talk about. Coming into the last corner, Dovi had pulled out 10-15 metre lead. You know, not a huge amount, but Marquez wasn't right on his back wheel. Maybe it was less than that, maybe 5 to 10 metres. I mean, we were having to watch this on the big screen because the final corner is about a kilometre away from where we were watching. I think that Dovi did a classic Bayliss on Biaggi. He knew Marquez was going to have to make a desperate lunge. He knew that was likely to lead to him outbreaking, so he gave him the room, tucked in quite neatly, didn't try and challenge it or battle it. Just tucked inside him, blasted for the line as Marquez struggled to stop the bike and turn it, which he did manage to do in time that he wasn't caught by Valentino, who ended up a hundredth of a second behind him. So Valentino very nearly got past, but Marquez just had enough momentum, maintained enough momentum to make it to the line. But we had Yamaha with Lorenzo, Ducati with Dovi, and Honda with Marquez. Almost unexpected, the Marquez getting on the podium. Rossi, supposedly happy in fourth. Yeah, they're nearly 12 seconds back, Danny Pedrosa. 3 seconds plus behind him, Maverick Vinales. 3 seconds behind him, Pol Espargaró. Ooh, a few hundredths behind him, Bradley Smith. Those two did battle to the end. 3 seconds behind that, Hector Barbaro. Ninth place, hats off. Well done, son. Scott Redding in 10th, another 3 seconds back. Alessio Espargaró becoming a rather despondent figure. He's not lashed out publicly like his brother has at Yamaha, which is a strange thing to do. But yeah, difficult to see what's going wrong there. Eugene Laverty in 12th had a good run. We'd lost Stefan Bradl, Loris Baz, Cal, and Cal's will come back to in a moment. Ian Oni, obviously, and Yonny Hernandez on the first lap. So behind Laverty, we had Bautista on the first Aprilia. Then we had Jack Miller and Tito Rabat together. Tito, love the guy. Absolutely love the guy. Really want to see him do well. It just ain't happening at the moment. We know that he'll put maximum effort into learning the bike and the tracks and doing as well as he can. Jack Miller, probably, as I think Stephen said in our pre-season call, more talent than Tito, but less consistent and possibly not quite got the work ethic. Certainly seeing him at the test, he looked a lot leaner than he did last year. So,
yes, just quickly on the subject of Jack Miller looking a bit leaner. In 2015, he weighed 74 kilos when he came to the test, which is a bit heavier than me, and I'm not really a mountain of a man. But I think I'm taller than Jack. But anyway, this year, Jack only weighed 64 kilos. So between Sepang last year and this year, Jack lost 10 kilos. 64 kilos, pretty normal weight for a MotoGP rider. So yeah, I think that Jack is taking it a bit more seriously this year, it seems like. Whether he's been sort of told slash forced to take it more serious, or whether this is him taking a bit of initiative, I'm not sure. But yeah, good to see that Jack is taking it more seriously. You know, got to defend that Australian pride.
Yeah, we'll see how they get along. It's just unfortunate. The Honda is not the bike it used to be. Cal's crash. Shot the throttle. Turned out that the spec ECU had completely lost where it was on the track, and it kept the butterflies at 60% open. So it was effectively a stuck throttle. And you think, wow, Honda did that. The Suzuka 8-hour Stoner caused him to crash. They did it in 2012 with Danny Pedrosa at Motegi, caused him to crash and probably cost him the championship, or a realistic chance at the tilt at the championship, because he was closing fast with Lorenzo that year.
Just quickly on this point, while Martin is more or less correct that it was more or less stuck throttle for Cal, in Suzuka for Stoner, it was a mechanical problem with the Honda, whereas here in Qatar, it was a problem with the ECU. The bike essentially got lost. You know, every time a bike passes through a timing sector, it basically figures out where it is on the track to, you know, give more traction control, less traction control, more engine power, less engine power, as Martin said. So Cal's bike must have glitched out at a sector or something like that. This problem isn't exclusive to Honda. It isn't even exclusive to the Magneti Morelli software. It's happened before. It happened with Nicky Hayden and Estoril when he was with Ducati. I want to say 2011, but might not be sure on that year. And then it's also quite a frequent problem in Mugello, especially during practice and qualifying. It happened to Jorge Lorenzo during qualifying at Mugello in 2013, I want to say. 2012. Was it 2012 or 2013 it happened to Lorenzo? But anyway, the problem with Mugello is that it has two pit entrances. So often if you take one pit entrance, the bike can get confused. And in 2012 or 2013 or whatever year it was for Jorge Lorenzo, he entered through the entrance that's about midway through the lap, and then his bike got confused. So then he tried to go out for another lap, but his bike didn't know where it was. And that ended in Jorge Lorenzo being quite frustrated. And we probably talked about it on the show at that time. But yeah.
Seems to be a problem. So, not really sure what they do to solve it. Can't see it's going to increase Cal's confidence on a bike that he's quite publicly said he's really, really not happy with. I read one interview at the end of QP, and he said, well, the best bit of the weekend so far is basically the crash, because I know how to do that. So Lorenzo goes to Argentina, 25 points, Dovi with 20, Marquez with 16. Be really interesting to see what happens there, how it goes. And if Lorenzo announces beforehand that he's staying with Yamaha, he was always going to stay with Yamaha. Maybe he's, I don't know, negotiating for a wall or a bit more money. I mean, we'll get on in a moment to the post-race shenanigans. But, you know, it's tricky to guess what's going on inside his head. I suspect he may not be that sure himself, but I do think once he makes a decision, he'll be 100%, I'm staying with Yamaha, and I'm going to be a Yamaha legend, or, yeah, I'm going to make the move. I'm sure you're all aware that Rossi asked about Lorenzo's potential move to Ducati. He said, yeah, no, that'd be a really brave thing to do. It takes a lot of balls to make a move like that. No, I think he'll stay. Which, of course, is a sort of backhanded way of saying, you don't have the cojones. Because I think Valentino would love to see Jorge leave. what he'd do if Jorge went to Ducati and still was consistently beating him, I'm not sure. And that Ducati seems to just be getting better and better. I don't know. I think, like our sort of semi-tongue-in-cheek silly season prediction earlier, I think Lorenzo's seriously thinking about it, probably more seriously than he ever has before. It's a big move. Spaniard going to an Italian team. Yeah, it's not that. That shouldn't really be an issue, and it probably wouldn't be. We just haven't seen that much of it. Trying to think of the last Spaniard at Ducati. Anyway, one for the Nuggins. Yeah, I think we'll, if we don't hear by Argentina and Iannone and Dovi maybe both on the podium or certainly up there fighting, and he has a hard time off the Ducatis and he looks at the strengths and thinks, damn, they're fast. I think we might see Lorenzo possibly saying, yeah. But I do also think he will move heaven and earth to win his third title. Hang on. 12, 15, yeah, his third title. No, 10, 12, his fourth title. Sorry, third was last year, of course. His fourth title with Yamaha to leave as the, if you like, the undisputed champion or the undefeated champion. Go to Ducati and try and do it all there as well. I thought it was slightly disingenuous of Rossi to pitch in with that comment. Interestingly, and something I thought made it a bit more likely, in an interview since the weekend, Lorenzo said, if I were to go, I have no doubt the Yamaha will treat me just the same. They want a championship as much as I do. And, you know, they'd be just as happy if I won it as if Valentino won it. Not quite sure that bit's true, but I certainly think if he was looking like the guy who was going to win it, Yamaha would say, yeah, we'd like to win it with you. And then if you go to Ducati and you don't win it, we can say, see, in our bike, good. You could win with us. I don't know. That's more of a Honda thing, but...
Yeah, I personally can't see Jorge Lorenzo going to Ducati in all honesty, as I sort of said at the start of the show. I think that it's a big risk. And I think that, you know, Yamaha's helped Jorge a lot. They've stuck with him through some maybe not the best times. Obviously, with the helmet debacle, people in Yamaha weren't too happy with that and thought that Jorge could have done some more things on his end to secure some what Yamaha thought would be better sponsorship in terms of helmets. And yeah, lots of these guys in MotoGP have a lot of brand loyalty, and you know, be that good or bad, I think that it'll see what's his face? Who are we talking about? Jorge Lorenzo. I think it'll see Jorge Lorenzo stay in Yamaha. But you know, as I proved last week with my Scott Redding on the podium prediction, I clearly know nothing.
After the race, after all these little digs at each other, and it was getting a little bit childish, and I suppose. Oof. I suppose we have to mention the booing when the riders are announced at the beginning of the race. The announcer didn't help. Every time he got to mention the name Valentino Rossi, it was like a WWF announcer or a Las Vegas boxing promoter. You know, ladies and gentlemen, welcome Jorge Lorenzo, Marc Marquez, Danny Pedrosa, and Valentino Rossi. And you just think, why are you doing that? For the guy who sat fifth on the grid, the guy who finished the race fourth. Okay, we know why he's doing that. It's Valentino Rossi. He is a superstar. He's the biggest star in the paddock, no matter what his results are. What was disgusting, though, was a pretty healthy crowd there, and shed loads of them just booed Lorenzo, and then even louder Marquez. And I'm thinking, you are not race fans. Sorry for people who might have felt inclined to join in with that, but as far as I'm concerned, you boo a rider who hasn't done anything but competed as best he can, which is sometimes underhand and sometimes, you know, skating very close to the edge of the rules. Just mixing my metaphors there. Sailing close to the edge of the rules. They're all the same. Don't think Ross is any different. And normally, in recent experience, it's been Rossi who's kicked all of these little spats off. The comments at Sepang about Marquez helping Lorenzo, even though he'd beaten him at Phillip Island. You know, so you can cheer your guy as loudly as you like. And I have no problem with Rossi. I mean, the guy at 37, is legendary what he's doing. And he's a brilliant showman. But, Jesus, some of these people, you know.
Yeah, lots of my feelings echo Martin's about booing riders. you know, if you say that you're a fan of racing and then boo a rider, I think that you're not a fan of racing. You know, fair enough. If you go to a race and you're just there to see Valentino Rossi, then, you know, you're welcome to boo any rider you want, I guess. I mean, it's, you know, it's your right to like a rider as much as it is your right to dislike a rider. But yeah, if you go to a MotoGP race under the guise of being a fan of just the racing, but then boo two of the best riders in the world, then yeah, you have no place there, and it's quite frankly pretty gross, to be honest. You know, riders are just doing their job. I know that it's a very cool job, and they get paid a lot of money to do a very cool job that, you know, most of us could dream about. But imagine if you're out there doing whatever job you do as a MotoPod listener. You know, maybe you sell t-shirts, maybe you put numbers into an Excel sheet, whatever. You know, imagine if you've had a great day at the office, and then some random comes along and just says, "Oh, mate, you're a bit shit." It's, you know, it wouldn't be on. You'd probably hit them in the face, or, you know, tell them some sort of expletive. So yeah, for me, it's just really hard to sort of, you know, sit there and watch riders and, you know, also people in the paddock, be they TV presenters or whatever, get abused. You know, everyone out there is doing their best job, from a rider to a cameraman. You know, just the same way that, you know, everyone goes to that day-to-day job and hopefully does the best job that they can. And I think that it's important to remember that, sure, you know, Jorge Lorenzo has a boatload of money and, you know, money's pretty cool, but at the end of the day, he is human, and, you know, comments and, you know, he knows that people are booing him. Like, he's not a stupid dude. I don't know. If it was me, I'm not sure I could handle it. I think it takes a very thick skin to be a MotoGP rider, especially in this current climate where, you know, riders are so accessible over social media and stuff. You know, you think if it was back in the Doohan and Schwantz and Rainey days, say you were a Wayne Rainey fan and thought that Kevin Schwantz was just the absolute devil, you know, you could only voice your opinion by booing at a race, and that would probably only be one race in your country. Whereas now, if you're a Marc Marquez fan and hate Jorge Lorenzo, you can, you know, tweet at him multiple times a day, multiple times an hour, and there's almost nothing that Jorge Lorenzo can do to stop you, but, you know, he still has to get that abuse. So, yeah, I'm sure that, you know, no one who listens to MotoPod is the sort who would boo at a race, or, you know, tweet abuse at a rider. But, yeah, just remember that, you know, they're humans as well, and, you know, would you want someone booing you? Probably not. I know I certainly wouldn't.
Valentino Rossi could sell coals to Newcastle and sand to the Arabs. I mean, he's a marketing genius, but they can't see it. I'm sure there are people who think he is genuinely a really, really nice guy. He's entertaining, I'll give you that. He probably is a nice guy, but he's another of these winners. Don't forget, he might not have that personality charisma bypass that we tend to associate with single sport champions, Pete Sampras, Michael Schumacher, Jorge Lorenzo, to a degree Mick Doohan, although he had a personality, he was just a very, very angry one. He has, his genius is the fact that he is an entertaining, colourful, Colin Edwards type character, but with this incredibly rare talent to have won as many titles as he has. But to win those, he's still got that killer thing. So I don't like hearing people being booed when they put their lives on the line for our entertainment. So if you stood near me and you recognise me, be aware that if you do it, it's your right to do it, but I'm going to think you're a twat. Anyway, on to the most important thing. Now, I'm not convinced that these scores on the MCN Fantasy League thing, everyone's updating equally, because me and Scott Bolton have got exactly the same team in MotoGP, Lorenzo and Iannone, and I seem to have pulled further away from him. Anyway, to the top of our table, in the lead, in a clear lead just, is Royce Farrell with Team B-Side, with 354 points. Tom Sid, in fact, tied on second, are four listeners, all on 352, so only 2 points behind. Sid Sandbagger's team with Tom Sid, Giulio Lupatelli's Thyrus Racing, Doug Moore's Ducati Doug, and Gregory Smith, Can They Get the Scores Right? Gotta love that name. Well, they're all at 352, so because there's five I've just read out, I'm not going to do whoever's in third place. They don't do equal second, unfortunately. For some reason, they Tom Sid's top and Gregory Smith is bottom of that group of four, but they're all on the same points. In the hosts, I've gone up to 32nd place with 291 points with Hugh Jass Racing. Scott Bolton with Team Moto Dog is 78th for 234. Third amongst the hosts is Dave Neal, maintaining his lead over Harry. Dipper Racing is in 89th with 206 points. Harry, 109th with 158 points, necessary faster. And in 164th place with 63 points, you'll see the team manager's name just says LP. But Len gave it away. We worked out it was Len Padilla because the name of his team, which last year was Moto Len, this year is Moto Lento. So he's trying to disguise his identity, but we sussed him out and Len happily propping up the bottom of the table. I think Len might have thought we meant to be doing the get as few points as possible competition. Races coming up. We've got our only clash between World Superbikes and MotoGP in 2 weeks' time. 3rd of April, we've got Argentina race for MotoGP, Termas de Rio Hondo on the 3rd, and we've also got World Superbikes at Motorland Aragon. Of course, with the two-day format, you've got one race on Saturday, one race on Sunday, and because Argentina are miles behind us, we can all comfortably watch that on Sunday evening, the MotoGP, without having clashed and had to choose between that and World Superbikes. So Aragon and Argentina come up next. Now, that's going to make an interesting conundrum for those on the Fantasy League who've been putting the cheapest MotoGP rider in when World Superbikes was on to get Sykes and Ray. This is what I did. And then a really cheap MotoGP bike, Superbike rider in when MotoGP's on, so you can have Iannone and Lorenzo. Well, we can't do that anymore. Remember, you only get two transfers between each race. I'd have preferred them to keep it the old way. A week after that, we have Circuit of the Americas. So a single week's gap between Argentina and Texas, which is ironic because it's like thousands of miles away. And that weekend, we also have the opening BSB round at Silverstone. And of course, we have the opening AMA round as a support series to MotoGP, also at COTA, Texas. That's it. Thank you for your emails. Peter Newell. Peter, we didn't get to it. It was a long conversation we had with Harry and I and Peter about winglets. And there were various other people making various suggestions, comments. So I'm afraid I didn't get it all lined up. But this is going to be a reasonably short show, certainly for me. Just short of 50 minutes, I think. I'm hoping interspersed between my comments there'll be some stuff from Harry who cleverly edit it in seamlessly, so you won't even know that we weren't on Skype together.
More seamless than a Honda gearbox.
Isn't that right, Harry?
It certainly is, Martin, and I don't think I managed to say the same point as you twice, apart from maybe the Daniele Petrucci thing at the start. So overall, I'm going to give this a double thumbs up, because here's some more pulling the curtain back. I sort of added my bits in as I went with this, mostly because to edit MotoPod, it usually takes about double the amount of time as the clip. So for a 1 hour clip like Martin sent, it would take me 2 hours to edit it. And then to then go back in and add my parts would have made it about 4 hours. And I don't have that sort of free time. So yeah, I hope everyone enjoyed this episode and hopefully we don't have to do this again because it's quite stressful. And back to Martin.
See how smoothly it works. I will tell him, listen to the end bit so you can put your voice into it. I don't look like a complete Burke or any more of a Burke than I do already. Thank you very much, ladies and gentlemen. Look forward to speaking to you again after hopefully next week, some of us, and after the next races. It's going to be the best season ever, no doubt about it. Thanks very much. Zoom, zoom. Curtis Lee will be sitting there thinking, I don't know if he's American or British. Curtis Lee, I'm suspecting American. I told him that Harry, he's much better than that Martin. Bam, I'm going to have to endure more of this. If you want to find out what happens, you probably know anyway.